Welcome to the Upstaging Gentlemen podcast. This is Michael with Play With Your Food Productions.
And Nathan with Legendary Productions. What's up?
All right. So we got some questions from listeners that wrote into the website today. And I think we've got three different questions, and kind of two of them sort of go together. So the first one is, what happens when you get cast members that start to act like directors? And that can be coupled with another question that we got. This one's from Jonathan. It says, what are the best practices for handling creative differences between a director and his team? For example, when a set designer, choreography, or costumer are not creatively in agreement with a director. All right. So that's some stuff that we've touched on, you know, in some other podcasts, like what happens when you get creative differences. And this is something that potentially can come up with every single show. So I think if you are going to be directing for any number of time, you know, in any amount of time, you're going to hit this area at some point or another. So you want to start off with that one, Nathan?
Yeah.
Got a thought there?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing, and I'll speak again from my perspective, of course, that's what this is about.
It's right.
My perspective, and the other side's Mike's perspective, and then that's, you guys can just decide what you like.
We have a perspective to
We're
share.
Perspective prospectors, prospectors. Okay, anyway. That was a wasted 3 seconds. All right. John, to answer your question, I think it's important as a director to truly go in it with a very open mind. You put these people on your team because they bring something to the table. Sometimes you put them on the team because that's all you have. But sometimes that has to happen. But I think it's important as a director to truly have a production meeting with your production team where you sit there, you kind of lay your ideas and plans and thoughts for the show, the approach, the style, the concept, and then kind of let it be an open room. And as the director, to sit there and just take notes, write it down. Kind of write down the information that's being tossed out to you, build on those ideas, and just kind of help grow. I'm all about camaraderie. I love the chemistry. I love working together in teams like that. I think it's fun creating art that way. But I think the most important thing in that situation is to listen to the team that you put in place and just be very clear with them ahead of time and say, hey, here's the deal. Obviously, I have final say, but you're here because I want you here and I need you here. I want you to be a part of this awesome production. So I think being transparent ahead of time, letting them know kind of how you work as a director, especially at theaters that don't have like an artistic producer.
You know what? So while you're on that, like, I think probably most people would agree with that. Like, everything that's pretty logical.
Yeah.
So how are there still problems that come up? So let's run a scenario.
Okay.
So let's say pick a crew member for me to be.
Costumer.
Yeah. All right. So let's just throw this out. So let's say the scenario being, we'll try to set one where there's a breakdown. So let's say that rehearsal is just finishing. I've been waiting to talk to you. And I come up, you're having a conversation with a few actors. I've got to leave. So I come up and is like, Nathan, look, I got an issue. I noticed that your budget for the lights is, you just bought some new lights. I don't even see why you need those, because here I am and the costume budget is not good. I think that you've picked some choices that are not good. And I'm now having to just go above and beyond, and we're right in front of some actors.
That's exactly. As you were going on that description, I would say, hey, Mike, let's go over here and chat real quick. I'd say, hey, let's chat over here real quick. Let's go in the costume room. Let's go chat.
Okay, so there is like protocol. Just so people know, like, because that's when I will lose it too.
Yeah, don't do that. That's not respectful. And now you're talking about money in front of a cast, and the cast is going to think, well, that's not good. They don't care about this, or they don't care about that. They care more about this.
It's literally about just, you know, like for me, in that scenario, it's what has the cast walked away with? Because
right.
Now they're just seeing the people that they're supposed to trust are not all on the same page.
Right.
They're supposed to be walking through this process, and they're like, ooh, you know, there's fighting going on there.
Yeah, I literally, as they were going into that explanation, I'd be like, hey, give me 1 second. I'll meet you in the costume room, and we'll chat about it. And what I would do as the director, or if I was the artistic producer, I wouldn't necessarily do this, but I would go, hey, Steve, or hey, artistic producer, can you come with me real quick? I just want to have a chat with the customer. Just so there's another witness there, another person, just another perspective. Because obviously I'm a little irritated now that you're making it seem like I don't care about the costuming. I'm already going to be defensive a little bit because you didn't really talk to me. You kind of were attacking me. So I'm already going to be a little agitated.
And you got sidelined in front of other people,
yes,
too.
And I truly think that I would say that. Or there was another, the music director was there, depending if it was a male or female costumer or not. In this situation, you're a male. So I would say, hey, Steve, want to come with me to a meeting real quick? Not that I'd even want him to interject or give input, but just to have someone there just to be an extra person listening so they know all that was said.
All right, so here's scenario two.
Okay.
So I'll still be the costumer.
I like that.
Don't worry, I don't dress the part.
Oh, crap.
All right, but let's say, that was stupid. What's a costumer even dressed like?
I don't know. But I played along.
What's your costumer dressed like?
Normal clothes, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that's
jeans,
typical, huh?
Jeans, t-shirt sometimes.
That's probably
sometimes.
Typical. Yeah. But let's say, okay, so I'm still the customer, and I come in. Nathan, look, I just talked with the myself, the lighting person, and the stage crew. We all got together, and we don't really like this next scene that you're doing, like, at all, none of it.
Okay, well, my honest answer or what I would say in the podcast?
I won't. give us the honest one, because I'll give you mine too.
Okay, here's my first response. If the whole production came up to me and said, hey, I think the next scene you're doing isn't good, we don't like it, I would say, well, I appreciate your input. I said, maybe you guys could email me or write down what your concerns are. But second of all, I don't come up to you when you're sewing a costume and say this looks like crap before it's done. Let me finish the product. And that's why I tell the production team and the cast, hey, go with me to the finish line. And then if you hate it afterwards, then you could say Nathan sucks. I'll never work with him again. Let's not do this. But I probably would say pretty abruptly, hey, worry about your side of the show and I'll worry about mine. That's probably what I would say.
I still think that's a podcast answer.
It is. I would probably say honestly, I'd be like, yeah, I really don't care. Go worry about your track. That's probably what I'd say. And then I would say, how about you let me finish my job before you start measuring? It's like you don't go to a painter as he's pulling out his paint with his first brush stroke and go, oh, this looks like crap. What? He's not even done. That's one stroke. Or I'd blame the actors. I'd be like, oh, you blame the actors? The actors suck. I can't help it. Just kidding.
I think what would irritate me in that scenario is that an entire conversation was had.
It's already happened, yeah.
Without me. And it's like, it's that point, I don't know, I feel like they want to say something. Like I don't know, let's say I'm the costumer, and I'm noticing something. Well, instead of just going to you about it,
yeah,
I go and I have a conversation with somebody else. And if they agree, well, then that now empowers me. And yep. Then if we can go get a third person, ooh, now we're really empowered because we've got three key people. And
that's like, happened to me at Legendary. That's yeah, happened to me here.
And I hate that because it's like, why do you do that? Just have the conversation with me. Don't get a whole group.
That's like, happened. And shows a production member will come up to me and go, hey, I was telling them this. I'm not going to say names. Some still are here. lucky. But they'll come up and say, well, I was telling them this and they agree that we should have this happen. I'm like, I don't care that they agree. That's fine. I don't care. Like, I don't like that. If you have a problem and you don't like it, come to me and be like, Nathan, that looks rough. I would truly go, wait, what's going on? Why? What's weird about it? Because I will listen. They're there because I want their input. But they do that. Or sometimes I hate it when they'll be in like an office working and then I'll hear them like talking, like not bad mouthing, but they'll be saying, wow, he's really doing it that way. And they'll be talking about it. And it kind of makes me mad, but it also makes my heart go, aw. Because I'm like, why can't you approach me with that? And maybe it's because I am a little bit scary or intense, but I just like, why do you have to build up an army against me? I don't get it. Like,
it's, you know, kind of what's both cool about it and not cool about it. It's cool that you're having a vision. It's right. cool that you're here. You want to contribute.
And they're caring.
And you're caring, and you've got a creative mindset for it. That part's awesome. It's just the hard part is, you know, like there's a better way to go about doing it rather than going around building up, you know, a
group. Well, you're causing dissension among the ranks. You're putting wedges in there that don't need to be there.
I don't know. It just feels weird at that point. And I don't know. You could look at, I'm sure there's people like that will listen to the podcast saying, oh, what? See, this director is so insecure or so egotistical that they can't take people going and, you know, gathering other opinions and going back. But it's different than that. It breaks down. I guess the morale, the creative joy, there's just a better way to do it.
And trust me, I could almost guarantee I'm okay being wrong. If something looks bad on stage and it sucks, I will be the first to go, yeah, I sucked at that. I shouldn't have done that. Or I'll change that. I'm the first to do that. But sometimes people come to you too at the worst times and you're in the middle of this, like I'll just say the trenches, and you're going crazy. And then they're like, hey, that doesn't look good. Thanks. I don't care. Right now I'm just trying to get this scene done. I will look at it and I will even go from your notes. I bring people in. I bring like Raul Carvalho. I bring him in to watch my shows and give me notes like crazy. And he's a critic. He gives me really good notes and he gives me some really bad notes. And there's some I don't even know if they're notes or just scribbles, but I'm kidding. Raul's really good at that, actually.
Raul never comes to my shows. I just get the, ooh, that's too rich for my blood. I can't. Oh, those ticket prices are expensive. Oh, I could eat a Tina's burrito for 15 cents at home rather than, I go out to Nathan's show instead. He's cheap.
Well, I'll take that, I guess. No, yeah, to go back to John's question, I think that, yeah, that sounded like Raul a little bit, actually. But to go back to John's question, I think it's just have clear communication and let them know straight up front, here's how the order of chain of command works. And this is, at some point, there's going to be someone that has to have a final say. So.
I'm just thinking of Raul giving notes. Like, Nathan, I got a thought. There were three people that walked out onto the stage, and then two people came out on the other side. And I was thinking, to make it symmetrical, you should cast a six person so they could walk out three by three. That's like really cool. I think that would vastly improve your quality in the Redlands area.
Well, I'm not going to confirm or deny that's how Raul sounds or doesn't. But he does give really good.
Can we get Raul on the show?
We could. He'd probably love to do it. And then people could hear how he sounds.
What is this thing in front of me? That's the microphone, Raul. Look at that.
he would actually enjoy it, I think.
That's it. We got to get Raul on here.
We'll do it. He'll have fun.
Don't show him this episode, though.
I'm not. I'm going to actually block him from it. What's the second question we got on there?
Okay, so the first one was just all about handling the creative differences, yeah. the best practices mm-hmm. for handling creative differences. And the second one,
all right,
we've got from, this looks like it is from your brother.
Ooh, Jeremy.
You wrote in, Jeremy.
He's so supportive of our podcast, always shares it and likes it. And that's awesome. Thanks, Jeremy. I think he might be my only brother that listens to it. Shane doesn't. Yeah, Shane, if you listen to this, come on, dude.
I don't think I have any family that listens to my podcast.
All my family but Shalina and Shane listen to my podcast.
I the only one that my dad listened to was when we did the Lessons from Our Dad podcast.
Let's call all of them that title then. And make
I think he listened to it and was like, of all the things I taught you, that's what you took away? Boy.
That's funny. I can see that, actually. All right, Jeremy's question. It's kind of a two-part question.
Let's check it out.
What are your thoughts on method acting? How do you feel about it? Is it good or bad? Mike, I'll let you start with this one.
The more acting I do and the more I get into method acting. And so I don't know. I cannot really see the bad in it other than, you know, people just going a little bit too far with certain things. But I think it
depends on the definition of method acting. Like, if you're playing a drug addict, I don't think you need to be a druggie to do it.
You need to have some type of a base to go off of.
if you think that's what you need to do to act, yeah. I mean, if that's what you agree to.
I mean, I'm not saying that you need to go and then, you know, shoot up like beforehand, but you've at least, if you're going to do a drug addict effectively, you better have at least studied that somewhere.
How do you study drug addict?
Oh, you can watch them. You can
just watch drug addicts.
I mean, you can see them in. That's doing some sort of a research.
Yeah, it's research acting. Method acting is doing like, what's his name? The red dude, the suit.
The red dude in the suit?
Iron Man guy. Whatever his name is. What's Iron Man's name? Mike, you know his name.
I don't know his name.
Okay, whatever. Not Santa Claus. Whatever, Iron Man, whatever, it doesn't matter. But I feel like, and even Heath Ledger with the Joker, which, sorry, I love that dude, I'm sorry he passed away. But if it consumes you and takes over your life outside, when you leave the stage, if you can't shut it off and turn off that character, I think method acting is bad. If it consumes you and becomes you, I think it's a bad option.
I think method acting is bad.
Me too.
Why bad?
Well, because it's not healthy for you. As an actor, you should be able to portray a character. You don't need to. I don't think you need to shoot up or do drugs. I think research acting is fine.
No, but, I'm not saying you need to shoot up and do drugs, but I think that you should study their mannerisms. You should study their behavior. I'm just saying if you get cast in that part, which I think is why you actually have to be very picky about what part you choose to take, right. Because you're going to be spending time as that character. You need to know what do they look like. I mean, what's that? What is it? What do they act like when they're coming off of a high?
Right.
And what is their mood? What type of mannerisms? What nervous tics are they? You know, they're going to be shaking over here. If you're gonna play it right, you're gonna take on that part. You've got to at least look into it.
Yeah, no, I think research acting is super chill. I think that's important. You need to do your homework and know. I mean, everyone thinks doing a cowboy voice is yeehaw, you know, get her done, you know, like they. But that's not. If you do research, you can find out there's a lot of other variety and options for that. So I think, but method acting, I've been in shows with actors where they leave the stage, they go back to the dressing room. If they're playing a villain, they're jerks backstage and rage quitting, upset, and still mad because they're in their character. I don't think that's healthy, in my opinion. I don't think that's good. Then the rest of the cast is not feeling connected to you. And even if you're not supposed to, there's still got to be some type of thing. So I guess, Jerry, my answer is, I think research acting and doing your homework is good. But I think becoming that character to play that character, I don't think is good, personally. And Mike sounds like a little bit more. Mike, well, you say, what is your thought? What's your answer to that one?
I'll go the character.
So you want to do the character?
I mean, I would try to go the distance for that character.
Sweet, yeah, right. Two definitely different opinions for sure.
Right there. Now I will throw this out because there's you may have heard me talk about Deborah Dawn. You know, she's a great costumer, also a great actress. And early on, she told me something that, you know, I couldn't wrap my head around, but it was her process. And her process was, she would say, well, there's 80% of me that becomes the character and 20% of me that stays me and watches over and protects myself from the 80%. And at first I would just be like, that sounds ridiculous. And I'd see her, like, you know, warming up before a show. I'd be like, hey, how's that 80% coming? You look like you're only about at 72% right now. I don't know. And, you know, I'd mess around. But the more I would kind of think about it, the more I'd get it. So it's like, yes, you become that character, but there is that 20% that is going to stop you from going all in and becoming a, you know, the character that would be self-destructive, the part of the character that would be that, like, there's a line that's drawn there. But up until that point, that's becoming that character. And I think that it is a mindset. It's a mindset preparing before the show. And you hear about, like, okay, what type of method acting is there? There's many various degrees. And there's, do you ever read any of Konstantin Stanislavski's books? Anything on the father of method acting right there, and then and then all those you know, many other theater theorists will trickle down from him. But he's got many a method, like, right there. So when you say method acting, that could refer to a ton of stuff. I mean, he's got method for theater warm-ups and the way, you know, your mindset should be when you walk into the theater, and the way of becoming the character. Like, you know, how does the character dress? And so that method acting could be, I'm going to research this character, and until that show closes, I'm also going to dress like that character. Or I'm going to start walking around in their clothes. I'm going to feel what it's like. You know, like a female actress may wear a corset for a few hours a day just to get, you know, like, you know, what it's like. It could be like, I'm going to eat like that character. Does this character play an instrument? I'm going to play an instrument too. I'm going to try to do what this character does. Does this character work out? Do I need a workout routine? I mean, so I think there can, you can even flip it. There could be some great benefits to it.
So your answer is very vague. There's many levels of method acting, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, just because the I don't mean for it to be vague, but I just mean for it to say, like, when you ask a question like method acting, good or bad, I think there's just a lot of levels.
Sorry, Jeremy,
to
that
it.
Was a stupid question.
Jeremy, that was so stupid.
To Mike, that was a dumb question.
That was a dumb
I think method
question.
Acting's bad. If you can't turn a switch and become a character on stage, then you have a problem as an actor. That's my opinion.
How did your brother, he's the only family member?
He's the only one that's loyal to us.
No, I'm kidding.
Anyway.
I love Jeremy.
Jeremy, method acting, for Mike, it's good. You can read the book of A Million Method Acting if you want, but... yeah, I think you should be able to turn a switch on and become an actor on stage and be able to shut it off, not have to live it or become it.
So you think that switch can just be done, boom, just like that?
Yeah, 100%.
100%?
Yep, 100%.
No.
I've seen it by millions of actors and myself included. I could be pissed off and walk off stage and be goofy happy in a millisecond. Easily. Like, that's what acting is. You're supposed to become something you're not with part of you as part of it to the audience so they relate to you. That's what acting is. I don't want to become that person. I don't want to become the murderer in the movie and then be pissed off backstage and people are grumpy with you because you're standoffish. Like, that's not fun. Like, I don't feel like people enjoy that. Like, I wouldn't be in a show with someone like that. I'd probably quit. So, yeah.
So
personally,
but if you're in the audience, would you want to watch a show?
Yeah,
with somebody who has done that level of, like, immersion?
No, it depends on the role, I guess. I guess that's a vague thing. It depends on how extreme they go. But I had a friend do, what was the name of the show? I don't remember the show, but he put his whole self into it. At some point, it becomes uncomfortable. And then when they go backstage and they're having to take a shot of whiskey to stay in that character, that's called method acting. I just feel like, that's called psychotic. Like, that's called you crossing lines, in my opinion. So,
I don't know. To me, I don't know if everybody would call that method acting. I mean, they could call it their method.
Right.
They could call it their.
And that's where you're vague. Well, not, I'm joking, but where your broad spectrum of method acting, I think there's many levels of that. Like, I've definitely done research and I forget. I forget the show it was, but I did do a bunch of research and tried different foods and stuff. I learned about when I was in Philadelphia story, I literally went to a boatyard to learn about boating, like yar, what that meant, learned about rigging. So I definitely do research into it so I could at least feel like that's natural to me, because if not, I would not even know what any boat terms meant, even if it's in the script. So I definitely think there's a form of that. But Mike, you definitely are more of a commit yourself all. I mean, when we first met, that's very, I mean, you, even your stand-up comedy you do, you fully don a costume and go all out. So I'm not saying that's a wrong approach. I just think there's levels of that. I mean, in movie industry, there's method actors that will become anorexic to experience being anorexic. And
look at Tom Hanks for the Castaway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that was definitely some, a method in the acting. Like, yep. He was going to be, I mean, could he have just done that? Like, yeah, they could have just put him out there and just said, look, he lost no weight, but like he really, really, really committed to that role.
Right. I mean, Christian Bale losing all the weight for Psycho, is it, or whatever the show was. I mean, I think, I don't know how healthy that is, but I mean.
Well, I think probably one of the most famous recent cases is Jim Carrey playing Andy Kaufman. Mm-hmm. And in the movie Man on the Moon, and there's a whole documentary about how deep into the character he went. And he went a little like he was driving the director crazy, Milos Forman, because he wouldn't allow himself to be called Jim on set. He arrived on set as Andy.
Wow.
He literally at home, he like, you know, was Andy, and he would arrive there. He would talk like Andy. He would do the Andy Kaufman voice.
And he's brilliant. I mean, so it works for some. I just think that's too deep for me.
I think it was too deep for the director at the time too. Yeah. But it was, and it was funny because, you know, Andy Kaufman, the practical Joker, and so right. He was running around doing tricks on everybody, and it was. But that documentary is pretty fascinating as well.
What's it called? Andy, what's it called? Jim Carrey?
Jim and Andy, I believe.
Okay, that's
Jim,
pretty cool.
Jim and Andy, and yeah, the man on the moon. So I don't know. Again, maybe my vague answer, but
no, it's okay to be. I mean, it is a broad spectrum of what that is because there's different levels of how much you commit.
I think it's a good question for every actor to ask themselves, like, okay, what is your level?
Right
there. What is the level that you are willing to commit to, especially if it's a character that doesn't have the same values as you?
Right.
Right there. Or maybe it's a character that, I don't know, maybe you've got lines the character swears up on stage and right. You are not one that swears. Maybe the character smokes a cigarette. Right. Now, have you seen that before where somebody will hold a cigarette on stage and there's smoke and it's obvious they've never held a cigarette before in their life. They don't even know what fingers to hold
or
it
how
with.
To light it or anything. Yeah,
and that's come on. Well, I'm not a smoker, and I'm not. Well, just you know, you should at least know how to hold the cigarette.
Practice,
you know,
it.
At least know what fingers.
You don't have to suck the smoke in, but you can at least learn how. So, I think my definition is research actor. Method actor just has a distaste because there's been so many actors that have never come back from becoming those characters or. Drugs or so I think that's just a sour taste in my mouth about it.
Well, have you seen that interview with or I read a news article about that actor Austin Butler that recently played the Elvis in mm-hmm. Elvis Presley in the movie and did like, you know, everybody's like, what a great job he did. And then, you know, afterwards this newspaper article was saying that he talked like him for so long, worked so hard to get his voice back. Now it's difficult for him to find his regular voice because he was like, you know, in that Elvis zone for so long, trying to talk like him, sing like him. And now
he has a job for life being Elvis, I guess.
Now he's got a job for life being Elvis.
Well, let's get the last question because I think we have like 3 minutes left. So
three. All right.
Oh, this is ironic. What is it like working with family and really close friends, and how do you go about dealing with that? Also, how do you deal with people coming to see the show, and if they don't think they were the best person for the role, or they feel differently about it?
All right. Well, can I chime in on this?
Please,
one? But it's going to share a Jeremy memory.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
So do you remember when we were doing Jackie Robinson and you were directing it and Jeremy was in the cast and you and he got into a fight? And
no, but I'm sure I'll remember in a moment.
Well, so it was like Jeremy got upset and he walked out to the car and I'm just sitting there and I'm like, I have to go like talk to Jeremy. And I'm like, dude, come on, Jeremy, come back in. And it's obviously this is like a brother fight. And he was like, I can't go back in there. Nathan, I can't go back in right now. I was like, Jeremy, it's like, it's not a family issue. It's like, we're doing a show. I drove 45 minutes to come and rehearse tonight and I'm rehearsing with you and I need you on the stage. And he's like, all right, I'll do it for you. But this is a,
well, that sounds about right. I guess.
Like a time thing. But, there's the good and the bad with casting the family. Like when it's good, it's good, and when it's not,
It is, because the family is very loyal. So my family, in my example, they'll do anything in a show I ask them to do. Balk like a chicken, lay an egg, like...
But they won't become the chicken, because they're not method actors.
No, they won't, because they want to not peck their food off a foot. But they will do anything you ask. But when it comes to rehearsal schedules, where they tell you, oh, I can't be there on tech week. What? Yeah, you are. You have to be there. Well, if someone else in your cast said that to you, you'd be like, well, you could be out of the show. That's fine. Well, family, you could be out of the show. That's fine. And I'll see you in 4 years at Easter, I guess. You know, like, I guess we won't be seeing each other at Christmas. So there is that connection there. Now, 9 times out of 10, that doesn't happen. But there obviously is a sense of they could tell you to shut up or you're being stupid better than someone that doesn't know you. But the biggest thing that I remind myself with family or close friends are they do have the theater or my best interest in mind. They're not going to try to sabotage me. So I think about that all the time as like kind of the way out. But also they'll be the first person to call you out when you're not being right or if you're being grumpy or cranky. But I would rather have them, especially if they're talented, I'd rather have them involved than not have them involved. And if someone comes to see a show and they're like, oh, they weren't what's best for the show. Well, I would do this for any cast member, not just my family. Bite me. Yes, they are. They're here because they're the best for the show, and I love them. Like, and it's not just my family, it's any cast member. Bite me. And if they suck, I probably would have already fixed it or go, yeah, maybe you're right. But most of the time, they're supposed to be here, and that's more important to me.
There's a big picture, too, that, you know, if people would choose to look at it, like, as a, you know, director, producer, you're spending a lot of time here. Like, you are at this theater a lot of time. And you want to keep a balance, too. And one of the best ways, you know, for you to do this, I mean, you're not just looking at it as a show. You're looking at this, you're seeing a very big picture. You're looking at a long time here. And having your family involved is a way for you to, you know, I mean, that's for you, even. That's your way of being able to be a part of this and not lose your family.
Right.
At the same point in time. And, you know, other people got to see that too. It's like, you know what, little family reunion going on stage, but this is how we connect and this is how we can still make this happen.
Well, and people may call me out on that and go, well, you let that brother in, you let that sister, cousin, aunt, uncle, nephew in. Well, yes, I did. But here's the thing. I do that for complete strangers too, with other people and other family members. Sometimes they get in because they need to be here for that moment. So it's not impartial, but people point it out because, oh, that's nepotism. That's your family. No, that's not why. You could ask my family. I don't cast that way at all. My family's wanted roles that they didn't get. They've gotten roles that they didn't want. Trust me, it goes both ways. So, yeah.
I cast my daughter in a show one time, and we mentioned this on the Inland Theater League one. She won the ITL award, and I didn't. I've never cast her again.
Yeah, let's not talk about
shame on her.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, let's not talk about ITLs anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never gotten one.
You almost did, though.
Dustin said I've gotten some, but I don't remember that.
I don't know. Maybe if you were a method actor.
That might be it, actually.
All
right, I'm going to go practice being a chicken right now.
You're just being a chicken.
Let's end this podcast so I can go practice being a chicken then.
All right. We will pick this up next time, and when we do, I want to see how many eggs you have managed to lay.
Not happening.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us on this highly unusual episode of the Upstage and Gentlemen podcast. Thank you guys for writing in questions.